If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/David McWilliams.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is actually podcast time, a bizarre podcast today here, which is the central metro station in Kiev. The central metro station in Kiev is where the 4 or 5 lines cross. But what is extraordinary here in Kiev, really, really extraordinary, is the fact that life goes on in this city. Electricity is on, water is on, the place is running. These are all people coming and going, back to work, back to school, etc. Now what you'll notice is an absence of young fellas, of young men. It's mainly women of every age, very few young men, obviously because they're on the front line. But something extraordinary has happened here. And again, this is just my impression for the last 2 days, which is that life kind of is going on. I mean, just check it out. These are normal people doing their thing. And maybe one of the most extraordinary things that Zelensky has done is the following. Somebody once said that the role of a leader is to understand the anxieties of the people and do something about it. And what he's done is he's managed to preserve the notion that life can go on. And that alone, having spoken to loads of Ukrainians in the last 2 or 3 days, has been what has kept them going, that life can go on. So you'll have all my reflections on this quick visit to Kiev. Extraordinary place, extraordinary times.
Wow, I was looking at that clip. Well, first of all, Mac, I'm delighted you're back. Safe and sound, I really am. And what a trip, what an adventure that was. But what is extraordinary about that clip, and you've sent a few clips from Kyiv, was, as you mentioned in that, it was a really busy train station.
I mean,
loads of people around, loads of people getting on with life, albeit war-torn life, but they're getting on. What was it like? Well, give us a rundown.
That was one of the things that really struck me, was the fact that there's no panic in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So I kind of expected there to be a real sense of foreboding, a real sense of jeopardy, a real sense of impending trauma. What you found was the opposite. And it's a sort of an interesting thing that when a people are attacked, something changes in the national psyche, in the collective psyche. And, you know, you could call it courage, you could call it spirit, you could call it, it's weird. In Ukraine, it was almost like a kind of a brazenness, like a cheekiness, as if they were going to stick in their 2 fingers up to Moscow and saying, listen, we know you're the boss man. We know you're much bigger, but we're here and we're going to fight. And so that was the first thing. But the second thing, it's very, very clear to me that the authorities in Kyiv understood profoundly the psychology, which is keep everything going. So for example, everything is open when it can be. Now, every now and then the electricity goes because electricity is rationed. Now, I was extremely lucky that in the week I was there, there were hardly any rockets into Ukraine, full stop, and into Kyiv, right? And
was that to do with?
Apparently, there was some because we were waiting. I was talking to the Ukrainians, and they said, "Look, this we were blessed. There's been some sort of handover in military command." Yeah,
Putin fired his general Armageddon, was what he was called.
He was
supposed to be this big hard man who was going to go in and obliterate. He was the guy who was responsible for Aleppo and flattening Aleppo and all of that.
Nice guy.
Exactly. Well, so I have no idea who the new guy is.
I think I was quite lucky because there has been an interregnum in Moscow in the last 6 days. Yeah. And during that period, they didn't shoot any rockets into Kyiv. And I think they shot them in just as I was leaving on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it starts again. So for the period, but I mean, it's interesting. You don't sleep very well in a place like that.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of constantly on edge. You're very much aware of the fact that anything can happen at any time. But what is interesting is this idea of life going on, this idea that the Ukrainians have steeled themselves. And these are people who've gone through all sorts. I mean, once you sit and you talk to Ukrainians and you listen to their history and listen to their side of the argument and listen to their logic for what they're doing, I mean, you really see a nation that has been battered, bruised, knocked around. The whole idea is they're still there. And this is the idea that we're still here. Is when you sit and you talk to them, what they're basically saying is we're not going anywhere, right? Yeah. And they actually believe they're going to win. We can talk about this in a minute. But the impression you get is of a country that has got over the worst, that actually feels now they're on the right side, number one, because they've been knocked. It's a bit like Ireland, you know. Ireland's occupied. Irish people should understand this, you know. We were occupied for years, and that has destroyed culture. It's changed us. It's given us a lot of our sense of ourselves, right? The Ukrainians feel the same way.
Yeah.
So for an Irish person, it's very easy to get what's going on. But they regard Russia as a massive, massive colonial power. And their view is that since Peter the Great, Russia has been expansionist colonial power. Ukraine was the first of the Russian colonies. This is their view.
Mm.
And Russia has done everything over the last 400 years to obliterate Ukrainian culture, Ukrainian identity, Ukrainian language. Although they always say to you, and it's very interesting, that the Kievskaya Rus, which was the original civilization, outdates Moscow. Kiev outdates Moscow by 400 or 500 years. So they'll say, we were here first. Okay. So actually, it's us that gave them their culture. But anyway, the point is, when I come back, the overwhelming sense of the city is defiance. And defiance is an unbelievably potent emotion, because it actually sets the tone for everything. And it really is, it's a fuck you attitude. Yeah. So, I mean, for example, the other night I went to a comedy show.
Oh, right.
You just don't think this is going to happen, right? So I met a friend of mine. So basically, I went in there with a guy called Sasha Kabanovsky, who's a mate of mine.
Yeah.
And a bizarre backstory I'll give to you. We'll be talking to Sasha on Thursday, but the reason I know Sasha, it's really strange, right?
Is that
the woman who taught me Russian, in 1991 in
that
Russia.
Little town.
Yeah, in that little town, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Her daughter is Sasha's best mate. Now, the reason we know all this is that when I was there, I wanted to go to Leningrad. I was in this little town. I got really bored after a while of learning Russian and being in the middle of nowhere. And I wanted to see Leningrad, right? And so I said to the teacher, my teacher, I said, look, I'm going to go to Leningrad. She says, well, you can't. Just you're too Western, right? You look like an Egypt. Like, you don't look like one of us.
And people always said that.
And people will know straight away that you're not one of us, and it's dangerous and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And she said, look, what I'll do is you can stay with my cousins in Leningrad, okay? But what I'll do is I'll take you there. And then she couldn't, because she was teaching. She said, look, my daughter will take you there. So her daughter took me to Leningrad. And we stayed intermittently in contact over years and years, like every now and then, every couple of years, like an email or something.
Yeah.
And then Sasha is her daughter, Nastya's best mate. And that's how we all met. So it's pretty hard. Life kind of, it goes in kind of cycles. You meet people in a different time, different generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all that. And again, staying with her family in Leningrad gave me a sense, staying in Russia gave me a sense of the Russians, maybe a little bit more of a sense of that part of the world than many, most Irish people have. But so, What intrigued me, so Sasha and I were there and we met a friend and he said, well, why don't we go out tonight? I said, go out tonight? Now, the interesting thing is there is a curfew.
Yeah.
And the curfew is at 10 o'clock and it's absolute. So the lights go out. It's really quite eerie, right? And the curfew is only for men. This is the interesting thing.
Really?
What? Yeah. So women can stay on the street, but men cannot, because women keep the whole place. Because Kiev is run by women now. The men are gone.
Right.
And because they're worried about Russian special forces being dropped in. It's kind of black ops being dropped in.
Okay.
Onto
so
the streets.
Any man on the street any is treated with suspicion.
Is gone. No, you're gone. You just can't, you know, they'll put you in the clink.
Right.
So at 10 o'clock, everything goes black. So you can imagine a city that's quite vibrant and there's bars open, there's restaurants open, there are shops open, there's people coming and going. And then 10 o'clock, it just goes completely black. Silent, it goes dark, the lights go off, and it's a full-on curfew for blokes, right?
Right.
Not for women. But before that, so everything starts, if you want to go out, everything starts about 5 o'clock. So
yeah.
It's like as if the whole night has been turned on its
head.
Why
did the Russians send in black ops women?
Because the Ukrainians are not worried about that. They've obviously figured that out.
Right.
But okay. Also the whole point is that somebody has to keep the place going.
Yeah.
You know? So that's very, very strange. So when you go to bed at night, the amazing thing is when you wake up in the middle of the night, as you do there, because you know you don't sleep very well.
Yeah.
You're in the middle of a city of 3 million people in the center and 5 million people in the metropolitan area. So it's actually huge.
Yeah, it's a big city. Wow.
It's quiet. It's silent, silent. Like you look out the window of the hotel I was in and nothing's moving. And there's no sound. There's no light. It's really weird. It's really eerie. And all you can hear is military vehicles
right.
going around, right? And that's very, very strange.
Who else was staying in that hotel?
God knows. I wasn't down at reception saying who's very few. There was nobody else there.
Yeah.
There was nobody else.
Room
there.
Service?
No, there was no room service. There was no room service.
Excuse me, is the spa open today?
Yeah, exactly. But
tell us about the comedy club.
So the comedy club, actually, look, I tell you, why don't we listen to a clip from the comedy club, right? And this again shows you when I say defiance, the people are laughing through the tragedy. And this is one, and of course they keep saying, Zelensky's a comedian. They say, this is what we do, right? We're laughing, we're using humor to explain the world to ourselves and to you guys, to the rest of us. And of course, the most extraordinary thing, this is how educated young Ukrainians are. They're doing the stand-up in English, not in Ukrainian, not in Russian, in English. So have a listen to this.
Maybe they will not rest. So I was walking between their air sirens and there were people on a picnic during the rocket challenge. And I was like, hey, it's fine. Me on the left side, the underground is closed. Rocket's not gonna get here. I think that we are all treat rockets now and Shahids like annoying thing. Like, it's a life-death situation, but we're like... like now. I have my nail appointment. Couldn't you fucking wait for 2 hours? I hate Russia. And we know that Russians are very smart. Yes, we all know that. Russians are strategic thinkers.
That's funny already.
They always think three steps back. Three steps back. They're like, I'm a genius. Well, I have no clue. What did they expect when they sent this piece from Rogozin's ass to French embassy? I would fucking give thanks to... And this is... There's some shit.
That's hilarious stuff.
No, and I tell you...
But you're right. It's like, what's with the English? How come it's in English?
Look, that comedian's name, right?
Yeah.
Is Anna Kochahura. And the majority of the comedians were young girls, young women, right? They're all hilarious. They're all taking the piss out of Russia. They're all laughing at the situation. And it is gallows humor, but it gives you a sense of the spirit of the people.
Yeah.
That, you know, their sense is, look, we are in... a fight for our lives. As they said to me, Russia can lose many times. Ukraine can only lose once.
Ooh,
and I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
We're in a fight for our lives. Our brothers, our dads, our mates, our boyfriends are down on the front line. But we're not going to crumble.
Mm.
We're going to laugh. We're going to joke. We're going to try and live as well as we can.
Spirit of the Blitz and that kind of
all that sort of stuff. That sort of stuff, you know. And I mean, listen.
Well, how many people were in that club?
So it's called the Underground, the club.
Right.
And basically the whole idea is the Underground is your safety. So every time you're in the hotel has a direction to the Underground. Just so when the sirens go off, you go straight down the basement.
Right.
Or ideally you go into the Underground. The Underground system is unbelievably comprehensive.
Yeah.
And
it's really deep.
It's incredibly deep.
Yeah.
It's the only time I've ever felt that sense of relief as you go down escalators which are really deep.
Mm.
And you think, oh, I like being down here.
Yeah,
this is really nice. I felt like my cultural home was in the underground.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There was about 60 in the place. And I mean, the first joke was Anna came on and she said, how many foreigners are here? And about 7 of us put up our hand. She goes, oh my God, 7. There was none last week. We must be winning. And the whole place just erupted, right? She goes, you're the best leading. You guys, you it was almost like, you foreigners are the best leading indicator, please, you know? Like, this is a straw poll. Are we winning? So it was about 60. There was a couple of foreigners. And I mean, again, what you find is that there was a few D-mob soldiers there. There were people like me, of which was very, very few. There was a couple of people, Ukrainian partners there, who've obviously stayed during the whole bombing. It was a very good mishmash of all types. But what is, again, fascinating is the vast majority of the people in the comedy club were Ukrainian, and the language of operation was English. Now, that is really
extraordinary. That is curious.
And I asked them about the English, and they said, oh, just learn it from YouTube. It's just hilarious. You know, I said, we learned from Disney when we were kids, and now we learn it from YouTube. And one of them said, what do you do? Well, they said, well, just stay on TikTok. So they're like normal people. This is the idea. You have normal people put in the most abnormal circumstances. And the extraordinary thing is the defiance with which bombing and being attacked engenders. It's unity, it's defiance, it's a sense that tomorrow's going to be better, it's a sense that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And it's very clear the Zelensky government has figured this out and is offering them normality in any way, shape possible.
Yeah.
So that's why everything remains open, even though most of it's dark. Like, it rains open, there's no electricity.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've
got to
go into places.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, where are we going in here? And then you have a little generator. You can hear a little generator in the corner, and there might be a little bit of light.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And but they tried to keep the whole place going, and that's the resilience.
Give us another clip.
Okay, I will listen to this.
And also, I was thinking about how my life changed since the invasion, besides the obvious things before, because I haven't left country, and it's, I could, but it's my choice. And I noticed that I stopped drinking so much because of curfew. I started... Yeah, that's the only thing that stopped me. I started to go to bed earlier, and I have now a food supply for 2 weeks. I work out because I have no electricity and live on 12th floor. And I think, what's the plan here, Russia? Healthy lifestyle. If I don't have electricity or internet, I read fucking books. What do you want from us? Just to be even better, stronger, and smarter. People that live on 12th floor, like 20 and higher, they're gonna kill Russians with low kicks. What's the plan? I don't know. Remember when we all used to be afraid of nuclear war? What a time. I love it that we don't fucking care anymore.
That's brilliant.
Well,
stuff.
Again, and this gives you a sense of the spirit of the city. And,
yeah.
and I think it's
hilarious.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think it's quite representative. So, for example, Sasha was visiting his cousins and his aunties, and they're all the same idea.
So tell us about the journey there. How did you get in there?
Well, it's not that complicated, John. There's a flight at 25 right. past 7 on a Monday and Friday. There is a Ryanair flight to a city called Lublin in eastern Poland.
Yeah.
And you just buy the ticket. It was 28 euros.
Go around, Michael O'Leary.
I was actually thinking it was amazing because obviously, and the plane is full of Ukrainians.
Yeah.
Typical Ryanair plane, you know, the kind of chaos at Ryanair Dublin Airport early in the morning. You get on the plane, and I expected it to be mainly Poles because it's a plane going to Poland, but mainly Ukrainians and many women, grannies, mothers, teenagers, little kids on this plane. That was kind of really reassuring because I kind of said to myself, whatever angst you have or fear, like if these three generation of Ukrainian women can actually do this, so can you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the usual Ryanair stuff. They're trying to flog scratch cards to these people. They just look at them saying, I'm not buying any scratch.
Here,
can I have a fiver for a cup of tea? These people are not doing it. And then we get off the plane. It's about a 3-hour flight. And then you're in Poland, and then there's a thing called Flixbus. I don't know if you've ever been on it, John. It's a big continental, it's a bus service.
Right.
So I just kind of followed the Ukrainians, and I had to get down to a town on the border, which is about another 2 hours from Lublin.
Right.
Impronounceable Polish name, Zemzhil.
That's exactly. Fine.
And this, yeah. And this is where the train goes to Ukraine. And of course—
Direct to Kyiv or—
Via Lviv and then, or Lviv and then to Kyiv. But the bizarre thing is, you are then with displaced people. And one thing really struck me is, the thing we forget most about displaced people is the fact that they have to wait. It's the waiting. I was waiting for hours at the border. It's freezing cold. You're waiting. Displaced people, they wait for passports. They wait for visas. They wait for tickets. They wait for permission, right? And when you kind of forget that if you're displaced, and this goes—
Who's holding them up?
Well, just in general, because they're kind of displaced. They're kind of, they're without a home.
Yeah.
So what basically happens is, if you don't have a home, and if you're slightly on edge, and this is, there's millions of people in the world like this, right? You're living, as these Ukrainians are, on the basis of the kindness of strangers. Mm. You're hoping that the person you meet is going to be kind. You're hoping that the soldier you meet is going to be cheery. You're hoping that the official you meet is going to give you the papers you need.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you lose all control over your life. And this, when I was standing waiting with them in Poland, and it was very, very cold. So this is at night. So because we've left Dublin at 7 in the morning. It's about 8 in the evening now. So it's a long, long trip. And it's freezing cold. It's about -4 or -5. And you're outside and you're waiting.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago being in Russia and being really intrigued, not necessarily by the KGB or the ideology, but was the little sort of almost dancing on the spot movements that Russian women did when they're waiting in the cold to keep your feet warm. Yeah, so we're all kind of dancing on the spot at this stage, waiting for the Polish guys to open the border. And it was just that sense of, we have autonomy as people who live in a normal country. We have sovereignty. We can do ourselves. We've got some control over our lives.
Take it for granted.
Well, yeah, we do. Mm. And you really take it for granted. And then you realize that there's a whole world out there of people who wait for others to give them permission to do things. So I was joining that part of society then. And eventually the train comes in. It's a big old hulk of a thing. And you get into the train, you go through the passport control. There's no passport control into Ukraine.
Yeah.
It's a free-for-all. There's not that many people obviously going.
Sure, you know, yeah.
There's not big queues, far from Ukrainians. And away you go.
How long is that trip then?
It's 12 hours. So it's a long train.
Yeah, yeah.
You get used to sleeping, sitting up when you're there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's 12 hours back as well on the bus, which is even, I'll tell you about that.
I could do the train, not the bus.
Oh, the bus was a bit rickety as well. And it's, breaking down. Oh, but it doesn't matter. But then you're in Ukraine and everything goes dark again. Mm. And all internet signal goes. That's the interesting thing. Everything goes the minute you cross the border.
Right.
And that's a bit eerie. Wow. Then the Ukrainian soldiers come on, and this intrigued me. They're all women. They all have kind of Kalashnikovs, kind of casually over their shoulders. Like, these are young women who should have kind of rucksacks going to college.
Yeah.
But that's in a different world. In this world, they have Kalashnikovs. They lock each carriage. This is the interesting thing. So you get on, the 4 or 5 soldiers get on, they lock each carriage. So nobody can go in or out.
Right.
And I said to the guy beside me, I said, what's the story here? He said, they're worried about Russian saboteurs all the time. So they need to check exactly who's coming in, check every single passport, check my passport. They were kind of looking at me. Like,
so they've obviously had experience of Russian saboteurs.
Yeah, and they really go through everybody. Like, I mean, they looked at me, what are you doing here? Why are you doing here? Et cetera, et cetera. Chatting away. And then, of course, one of them says, oh, you're from Ireland. Oh, my mate's over in Ireland. Yeah. So there was a bit of that.
He's working on the site.
More or less. And then basically the train goes through. If anybody's ever traveled in that part of the world, it's birch forests, right? There's birch forests, miles and miles. And it's just, you go through the Ukrainian night, and in the beginning, you don't want to fall asleep. You're a bit nervous. And now, of course, because the trains have been bombed quite a bit, and the train stops every now and then for hours.
Yeah.
But eventually, normal human relations, you just fall asleep and you wake up and you're in Kyiv, more or less.
But what were you feeling? Like, were you on edge? Were you nervous? Were you
a little bit nervous?
The way when other people, as you were saying earlier, that when people are being casual, or they're not so much casual, but getting on with it, that in itself gives you a bit of security.
You take your lead from the Ukrainian grannies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, these are stoic people, right? Yeah. These are stoic women. There were lots of chatting. There was lots of kids. Kids were intrigued. They were chatting away to me in English. Kids have obviously learned their English here in Ireland.
On TikTok.
Yeah, no, the TikTok would be later on TikTok. But little kids, you know, yeah. You know, little kids with country accents. You little Ukrainian kids have been here for 5 months, right, with Limerick and Clare accents.
Yes, of course.
And everything.
Yeah, of course.
So it was kind of like, it's weird because you know that potentially you're going into the heart of darkness, like you're going into a dark place, right? So it's more apprehension than fear. It's more worried about what you might see coming up. So every time you feel normality, there's a sort of a collective sigh of relief. Your body goes, oh, okay, that's fine, right? But there is always this sense that you're going to into a place you don't understand, doesn't understand you, that could be dangerous. And then you arrive in Kyiv.
Did you have a handler, like somebody who was kind of navigating this for you?
No. I went with Sasha.
Well, you met Sasha there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but no, we just went from Todd.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose it's an odd thing to do, but it's...
This is a weird question because this is something that I would think about, is food. It's just me, okay? But I do want to ask you this. So
I wasn't thinking about food.
No, but if you, like, do you pop into shop for a Mars bar, you know, when you're a bit peckish or, you know...
Yes is the answer.
And so everything on that level is
everything's
operating
working.
More or less.
Everything's working. You need to get on
I just need to ask.
You need to get in first name terms with borscht, okay, with beetroot soup. That's what keeps you going. But I mean, again, what I'm saying is, I come back to the original point that keeping the city as normal as possible is a psychological imperative of the government. So the lights are on when they can be. Mm. The heating's on when it can be. It's incredibly cold. I mean, it's -8 or -9, which is a sort of, you know, for paddies, that's like hair, you know?
Sure.
The lights are on when they can be. Shops are open when they can be. So there is a huge effort being put in by everybody not to panic.
Yeah.
And that is an incredibly powerful weapon for any population to have.
Do you know, I'm really curious about what happens over the next year, 2023, looking ahead to Ukraine after the war.
Yeah.
Let's have a talk about that after we do this.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So, Mike, what does the future hold for Ukraine, in your view?
It's clear to me now that Ukrainians will not lose, and that the West will not allow Ukraine to lose. That so much money, so much strategic impact, so many arms, so many people have already died, that the Ukrainians will not back down. It's very, very obvious to me that the people are in no mood to compromise. Mm. Everyone you spoke to, rich, young, old, poor, people from the country, people from the city, people whose brothers are fighting, people who are fighting. We met a good few soldiers who were up in Kyiv. There's no way in the world they're going to compromise. This is so obvious to me.
Yeah.
And now maybe, but events might overshadow them. But
sure.
It's very, very clear that Russia thus far has proven, I mean, you could hear it in the comedy. I mean, the Ukrainians just take the piss out of them as the dumbest people in the world, right? Yeah. That has proven that their military strategy is from the Second World War. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians have proven that with a much more nimble force, they can actually outsmart, outgun, outfox the Russians. The Russians took loads of territory in the surprise attack on the 24th of February because it was a surprise attack.
Yeah.
Once the Ukrainians got their act together, they fought back, and the Russians have, you know, the Russians have obviously evacuated from all around Kiev and all around the northern part, and they're now focusing everything around Donbass. But my sense is that Ukraine, there is an extraordinary energy in Ukraine now to change the system. So their basic idea is the following, that they're going to win, they feel, right? The ceasefire may or may not include the whole of Ukraine. We can come back to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But they are going to win in the sense that they've already won. Ukraine has already won this. I mean, Russia has already lost in terms of what its objectives were, in terms of what Putin's objectives was. It was going to be a 3 or 4 week war. They were going to replace Zelensky. They were going to put in a puppet. They were going to change the regime. That's all over.
Yeah.
So the Ukrainians have won in effect thus far.
But a lot of the talk at the moment, though, in the West, or the West is beginning to turn where some of the stuff I'm reading anyway is beginning to turn to, okay, now it's time to talk and now it's time to compromise. But you're saying
Well, when I was there, Zelensky was meeting the prime ministers and presidents of the Baltic countries and Poland.
Yeah.
So basically, I went to Kyiv, Zelensky went the other way, Klyvov, right? I went east, he went west. But so there's a very clear alliance of former Soviet bloc, Soviet, how would you say, influenced countries that now see this opportunity as a way to reshape the entire map of Central and Eastern Europe. And that map will be reshaped and Ukraine will be at the heart of it, at the core of it. But what they were telling me is that the demobilized soldiers will come back from the front. This is their assumption, right? And those guys do not want to go back to the kleptocracy, Ukraine was a kleptocracy, right? A really serious, corrupt country. The worst performing of all post-Soviet countries because of corruption. There is a feeling that the soldiers are going to come back and change it. They're going to demand a stake in the society. And that's an incredibly dynamic and unusual force, right? That the way I look at it is the British soldiers who came back after the Second World War, right? Came back from fighting the Nazis. They chucked out Churchill. Basically, the amazing thing is they voted, the British soldiers mobilized for the welfare state. The welfare state in England was born on the beaches of D-Day, of Normandy. Those soldiers came back and they said, we didn't beat the Nazis to give this back to the aristocracy, Churchill, you and your mates.
We want
to create a new society. So they created the welfare state from the absolute imperative of the demobilized soldiers to change the society having won. The Ukrainians are hoping for the same thing. The soldiers are going to come back and say, no corruption, liberal democracy. It always has been quite a vibrant democracy, but the corruption has been endemic. That's the first thing. So they see the soldiers as a potential force for social change. And they look at the UK, although they didn't say it, the UK might be the model, the UK after the Second World War. The worry is also another part of the world that I know a bit about, the Balkans, is the soldiers came back from the Balkan War in Croatia and in Serbia, and they had a different impact on society. So in Serbia in particular, but to a lesser extent in Croatia, soldiers came back and they were very quickly disillusioned with the peace. They'd won the war in the Croatian case, they'd lost the war, the Serbian case, they're disillusioned with whatever peace, and they became very nationalistic and atavistic. And Croatia is now just emerging from that. But for the last 2 decades, Croatia and Serbia have been dictated by the legacy of the war. They haven't moved on.
Yeah.
So soldiers come back in two minds. In the Second World War, there was, we're going to change the world. In the Balkan War, there was, we're going to go back to refighting this war again.
Yeah.
So that's the worry. I was also thinking that maybe, you know, Ukraine, because it's so big and because it's got huge natural resources, could do worse than looking at a country for post-war reconstruction like North Korea and South Korea. South Korea is the best performing economy in the world, has been for the last 40 years. So maybe they could look at South Korea. They don't necessarily have to take an IMF, You know, they say, look, what do other countries do? And it will be similar because they will still have Russia on their border. In the same way, South Korea still has North Korea on their border. Yeah. They still have an enemy on their border. So they could do that. But I mean...
They're also starting from a lower base insofar as their infrastructure is absolutely trashed.
And
they have to build the basic stuff first in order to... South Korea built a high-tech
But South
community.
Korea was poorer than Ghana in 1967. South Korea was one of the poorest countries in the world. And its infrastructure was totally destroyed by the Korean War as well.
Yeah.
So that's one idea.
Okay.
And then you think, okay, what sort of options do they have? Now, the obvious option is that Ukraine will become the most important country in Europe for the next 10 years. I've no doubt in my mind, because the entire European experience after this war will be containment of Russia. And Europe and the United States will want to turn Ukraine into the frontier state.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, they're going to have to finance enormous amounts of reconstruction. So, for example, the fast track to the European Union for Ukraine is a given. That's going to happen.
Mm.
And then, of course, the Americans are just going to write a check, right?
Well,
and then the thing is, does Ukraine turn into a fortress or a startup nation?
Right.
Right? So there's lots and lots of people in Europe who will cynically quite be happy for Ukraine to be a barracks. Right? No, yeah. Think about
yeah,
it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Against Russia, right? But that's not going to deliver anything for Ukrainian people. So the Ukrainians need to figure, I mean, you know, and I was there talking to lots of economists and lots of strategists. The Ukrainians need to figure out what sort of country they want. And there are different models. Like one model is Germany after the Second World War. So Germany, the Federal Republic of Germany, becomes this incredibly successful country, rebuilt. With American money.
With American money, I was going to say.
But at the cost of becoming the frontier land between East and West. So Germany was highly militarized, was occupied, and was basically a nuclear dump for the West.
Can I just say one thing about American money? Is that if there is a change in presidents and it becomes a Republican president, there is a strong element in the GOP that are very anti-Ukraine. Whether anti-Ukraine or not, they're anti-spending more money on Ukraine.
Well, I think that if the Republican Party in America becomes a friend of Putin, which is in effect what you're saying, it will never get elected in again. I mean, there has to be American interests in the State Department, and those American interests can be quite cynical, they can be strategic, they can be like playing chess in the world.
Mm.
But if your enemy is Russia, and the Americans have decided unambiguously that that is the case, the West has decided unambiguously that that is the case, then you have no choice but to support Russia's enemies on Russia's borders. And those enemies are the Baltic states, Poland, and Ukraine.
Yeah.
And that's what Zelensky was doing this week in Lviv when they all met. And I think they're going to reestablish an entirely different map of Europe.
Yeah.
But in economic terms, you know, you obviously doing the German model would be extraordinary. Zelensky himself has hinted at the Israeli model, which is kind of bizarre.
What does that look like?
Well, basically what he said is that Israel, you know, and I don't know how he can square, you know, Russian invasion the Donbass with the West Bank and not think, hold on a second, there's a similarity here.
You're taking
over another person's country, right?
Yeah.
But be that as it may, and we can park that for a minute and talk about what he's looking at is that Israel is a highly militarized society with an ever-present fear of its neighbors. And therefore, the country is unbelievably militarized. So everybody's in military service. That's what's going to happen in Ukraine. It's going to be highly militarized. But the Israelis have also an extraordinary high-tech economy.
Yes.
Massive, incredibly impressive high-tech startup economy. And Zelensky sees that maybe that's what Ukraine looks like. So it doesn't look like a Western European country.
Yeah.
Because it can't.
Yeah.
It has to be heavily militarized. Has to have a massive military budget, and it has to have huge conscription of all men and women, but cannot do this and have a high-tech, normal economy. Because typically, as we've seen in Russia, militaristic economies are disastrous for people.
Yeah.
Because too much resources goes into the military and not enough resources goes into the real economy.
Mm.
So that's another model they can look at. So all these things are in the mix for, you know, is it Germany after the Second World War? Is it South Korea? Or could it be?
Yeah.
You know, is it Britain after the Second World War until the Demidov soldiers? Does it go back to the Balkan thing where you win a war, but you actually lose the peace, which is very, very clear
what
could happen?
Yeah.
You know, so there's
many. Or a hybrid of all this kind
of
stuff.
But then the fascinating thing is all the young Ukrainians that I met at the comedy show
were
saying, why not Ireland? They said, hold on, you were poor and now you're rich and you have all these great companies there and you've a migrant talent. And one of them said, you know, I'll have what you're having. Yeah. Right? So, because they kind of like this sort of loose, sort of proto-American, democratic, but kind of funny. So a lot of them are saying, what did you guys do? Because we don't want to be Germany. They've a real fondness for English language speaking countries.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And well, it's clear with their level of English is fantastic.
We don't want to be Israel, you know? Yeah. That's not our bag. Germany, no. South Korea, yeah, okay. But this, you guys have something. So it was quite interesting. There was a hell of a lot of chat in economic terms about what did you do?
Yeah.
How did you do it? How did you go from being poor to being well off? All that sort of stuff. And that was quite interesting. But their awareness, you kind of forget that if you're on TikTok all the time and you're in an air raid shelter, your awareness of the world is phenomenal.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
So what I would say is that the Ukrainian position is that they will win. They will win with Western support. The Western position has shifted clearly from let's give the Ukrainians enough to hold out to now let's give the Ukrainians enough weapons to win or to actually force Putin to the table. Now, Putin's long-term idea is we can still grind this out. Our economy hasn't been destroyed by sanctions. We still have huge resources. We still have a massive amount of soldiers we can bring to the front. But the Ukrainian view is kind of bring it on. Now, of course, the problem is that the Ukrainian view means thousands more men are going to die, right?
Mm, yeah.
So at a certain stage, somebody's going to have to call a halt to this. Somebody's going to say, hold on a second. The Ukrainians are now talking about getting back the whole of Crimea. Now, that would require a full-scale war with Russia. And God knows what that would do, right? When I say full scale, the Russians will mobilize everything for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Russians are running out of ammunition. This is what I keep hearing. They're running out of ammunition. They're running out of options. They're stuck in the trenches in Donbass.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians are saying, when we get the Leopard tanks, when we get all these, you know, these Abrams tanks, all these things, we will change the direction of attack. And they're all saying that the summer will be the proof of the pudding, where they assume they're winning. But I mean, that means thousands of people are going to die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thousands of people are going to die. So you have to square all this aspiration of one country, their sense of themselves, with the reality that it's a stalemate now.
Yeah.
It's a trench warfare now. And, you know, some Ukrainians would have said, well, look, hold on a second. We need to do a deal here. So it'd be fascinating to see what happens. But when you're there, that's the key. I come back to it. When you're there, you get the sense of a country that has survived Armageddon, that came within days of capitulation. That's the sense. I went to Irpin and Bucha, right? The places that those atrocities.
Yeah.
It's really close. Like it's about 6 or 7. The Russians were about 6 or 7 miles from the center of Kyiv. 6 or 7 miles. You can see where they were, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was that close. It was like 2 or 3 days. And once the Ukrainians managed, however they did it, I don't know how they did it, to hold on, to cling on and gradually recover bits of their country, the confidence that has given them, the defiance that has given them, is something that flows in their veins now. And you can really feel it. It's palpable. You know, and on Thursday, we're going to talk to Sasha Kabanovsky, who's, you know, he's Kyiv born and bred. All his family are there.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating when you're with locals, you know, what their view is. So we're going to talk to Sasha, not just about Ukraine, but about the whole Russian experience, being a child of the Soviet Union, how they feel about Russia now, what they want to see in Russia now, the options they believe Russia has. Because again, you know, we're talking about Ukraine, but there's two sides to this. And the Russians have a side. They feel it's legitimate. They feel that they have a point.
Yeah.
We're talking about Ukraine now. But the Russians, so let's talk about, you know, whether the Russians, what they feel or how they're going to go. My own sense, though, is that the Russians are in a complete cul-de-sac here and they're isolated and they know it.
Yeah.
Putin knows it. But it was interesting. Like last night, I went to sleep and it snowed. And it's an amazing thing, you know. And I wrote an article for the Irish Times and I ended it with the quote from the dead.
Go on.
You know, no, and you kind of felt that when you're watching James Joyce of the Dead. The very last lines are basically the snow is all over Ireland. It's the Bog of Allen thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, falling faintly. The snow is falling faintly through the universe, faintly falling upon all the living and the dead. And you really felt that in Kyiv, that it was the living and the dead. And the place was being entombed by the snow and the silence. But you knew that this was just an illusion, that what was going to go on was going to be something apocalyptic. But it really, it kind of came back to me as I was walking around the bizarre little hotel room the other night, half nervous, waiting for the air raid sirens, which thankfully it never came. A bit of Joyce, always a way to
absolutely.
end. But we'll talk to Sasha on Thursday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.